So, American Honey was produced by Andrea Arnold, an English filmmaker and a former actress. She won an Academy Award for her short film Wasp in 2005, and her feature films include Red Road, Fish Tank, and American Honey, all of which have won the jury prize at the Cannes Film Festival. And all of Arnold's past films have been distinctly British. So her decision to set American Honey in America starkly contrasts her past films. And she explains her motivation to film in America as she felt the poverty she witnessed in America was more intense than anything she'd seen in the UK. And American Honey was also inspired by a true story that Arnold read about an American magazine crew in the New York Times. And I felt this movie was very authentic. Which is partly due to her casting choices and partly credit to her extensive and immersive research. So Arnold spent around 2 years road tripping alone and with a real life mag crew across America and observed this reality firsthand before writing the film. And Arnold is quoted in an interview saying, "I saw so much. America's obviously a huge, great, complicated place, and I've grown up with a sort of version of America that's via Hollywood. This film is a lot about me going and looking and finding out a bit more." So Arnold was really dedicated to doing her research and trying to portray this reality of American impoverished teens as authentically as she could. So Arnold also made very interesting casting choices and clearly was trying to make this film not a typical Hollywood film. And because of this, she chose many of the cast members and almost all of the magazine crew from underprivileged American teens rather than Hollywood actors. And she even did not choose college-educated students because she thought that there was an inherent privilege that accompanies higher education. So Arnold describes finding Star, the lead in American Honey, on a beach in Panama during spring break, only 2 weeks before the production. And Arnold says that many of the other cast members had never even been able to afford dental care and suffered from terrible toothaches. So this really reflects the authenticity of the cast members in the making of the film.
Yeah, Isabel, on a more personal note, before I actually knew that this film came out and everything, I actually knew that they were filming it in the town over from mine. And my sister and I, we like hopped over to go to Muskogee, Oklahoma to see what this was about. You know, they were talking about Shia LaBeouf on Twitter, like, oh, he's in the town over. Let's go see him. He's at Walmart. So we go over and we didn't actually end up interrupting their filming or anything. We were too starstruck. But 4 years later, when I was watching the film, it came up on Netflix, and my mom and I recognized the Kmart, and we paused the movie and we're like, what? This was actually made into a big movie? And it was just so crazy to see a big like Netflix feature on the front page. And meanwhile, it's from this barren like strip mall area that you wouldn't really expect to be filmed at. I mean, they have good food there. It's very southern, but it's also a lot of parking lots, kind of like a dusty area, and what you would expect of typical Oklahoma, which is where I grew up. But given that, and given how I see that as very close to me and close to my home, I also had a differing perspective on the authenticity of the film because I think it brought up a lot more questions for me than it did answers on what makes a film authentic. And I know we have outlined several ways, Isabel has mentioned, about how Arnold has worked to make the film the most authentic it could possibly be. And obviously, creating a story requires movement from the realities of the magazine crews to creating a staged fictional world. So she did choose to bring in non-actors and a famous actor as well. And I found that Sasha Lane, as the main character, as Star, was most unlike her character in real life because she's this girl from a Florida beach, and then she's playing a Southern girl. And she has to pick up a Southern accent and live a life completely different from her own. I know in one article it was mentioned that she actually did have some college education and she was told to use simpler words. And that was really interesting how she had to mold herself and her emotions to fit the film. Parts where she was supposed to be sad, she actually wanted to have an upbeat and fun time and live her party days. So the director did mention it was a challenging thing to have to work and mold Sasha into Star. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think those are great points and a very interesting perspective that you bring to the movie. So to talk about the plot of the movie a little bit, American Honey opens with a scene of Star and her two younger siblings looking through a dumpster for food, and they retrieve a plastic wrapped chicken. And this is an interesting opening scene, as it's actually the same as an early scene in Emma Klein's 2016 novel, The Girls, where a grubby gang of teenagers is described diving into a dumpster to retrieve a plastic wrapped chicken that has a grotesque fetal quality. And both Klein and Arnold's works have been described as sharing a fascination with the American poor and the theme of found families that are structured outside of traditional society. So for Star, this found family is the Mag Crew. And she meets the Mag Crew in a local mega store, like Kmart or something. And Jake, the leader, played by Shia LaBeouf, is a flirty 20-year-old something, and he offers Star a job opportunity. And when she meets Jake, the song We Found Love is blaring over the sound system of the store. And Arnold is quoted in another interview talking about that song. And she describes that this song was one of the top hits during the time when she came up with the idea for the movie and when she started writing the movie, and that it really spoke to her emotions and her feelings when she was writing. So Star then goes home after meeting Jake, and we get a glimpse into her home life. And Star is responsible for going out and finding food, whether that be dumpster diving or somehow else, and is responsible for cooking for her siblings and her stepfather that they live with. And her stepfather is a drunk, and we can tell that he clearly sexually assaults Star and pretty much neglects the younger siblings. So Star can't stop thinking about the job opportunity that Jake offered her, and she knows she needs to get away from her abusive household, but she doesn't want to leave the children with her father, Nathan, because she's worried and pretty much knows that they would fall into the same fate as she's experiencing. But the young children's mother and Star's mother really wants nothing to do with the children. She's intent on living a carefree, childless life. So Star runs away and dumps her younger siblings with their mother and goes back to the parking lot and sleeps under a car to meet the magazine crew the next morning.
Yeah, you bring up the soundtrack, you know, We Found Love, and that's such an upbeat song compared to her abusive and tormenting father and her fragmented household. It's just this contrast between a youthful spirit and what she's experiencing and being forced to accelerate her maturity and take care of these young kids. So I thought the soundtrack is definitely worth mentioning and really also adds a lot of authenticity, because music makes or breaks the road trip for American Honey. And there's these long methodic car rides where nobody's talking, everyone's asleep. And then it's broken up with high energy music breaks and scenes where the crew is dancing around, chanting rap and hip hop songs. So unlike other independent films, the music of this film is pretty high budget, and using high budget music is a risk because it ends up having payoff as a marker of a contemporary road film, but it requires a lot of money to actually get the credits for these songs. In contrast to the pop music played in many Hollywood films that are just, they're like melodic pop music, but sometimes don't have any words to them. And that really helps with copyright issues and keeping the cost of the film low budget. So the music adds to the authenticity, and it's seeking to portray what youth actually listen to in America and what the cast actually would listen to, rather than use of a polished soundtrack that has everything kind of meshed together. So one song in particular stuck out, Choices by E40, which is a 90s hip hop song. And it features the line, "I choose to get money, I'm stuck to this bread." And this hustler mentality is a shared one between the rapper and the disenfranchised youth in the movie and the magazine crew, as they're people who have faced maltreatment in America, namely people of color and people in poverty who have been disenfranchised by the racist social structure. So one can also note a scene in which the magazine crew interacts with a group of Black men outside of a motel, exchanging pleasantries in their likeness as people who live humbly. The shared life experiences between the locals and the magazine crew prove that living in similar spaces brings people of different races together in America, particularly those in low-income housing.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point. And in the film, Star also comes into contact with really wealthy people when she's going around selling her magazines with Jake. And after one of their sales, they're in a wealthy neighborhood, and Star notices that Jake has been taking things from the homes of these wealthy families, little mementos or jewelry or something like that. And Star and Jake get in a disagreement over his methods. She doesn't like that he lies and tells stories to try and get money from these homeowners. And so after one fight, Star runs off into the street, and a white convertible with three middle-aged cowboys is passing by. And they ask her if he's bothering her. She says yes and jumps in the back of the convertible, and they take her back to their really nice and beautiful ranch house. And Star is a little trepidant, but not nearly as trepidant as you would think a young girl alone would be getting into the car of three men that she doesn't know and that have guns on them. But Star is desperate to make a deal, so she starts drinking with them, and she strikes a deal with them that they would buy $400 worth of magazines with the authentic strips and everything filled out if she would drink the worm at the bottom of a mezcal bottle. And she does it, and they buy the magazines, and Star feels great about making the money until Jake finds where she is somehow and comes in with a loaded gun and forces all of the cowboys into the pool and runs off with Star and takes the keys and takes the convertibles. And as Star and Jake speed down the open highway in the stolen car with the money she's made, she screams, "Wow, I feel like I'm fucking America." And that's actually one of the only times America is referenced in the film, except for in reference to the song American Honey and obviously the title of the film. And the convertible gives them a feeling of wealth and freedom and hope that this will be a new turning place in their relationship. And this is when Star and Jake's relationship becomes physical, and Jake provides a sense of comfort for Star and a real companion to Star for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, the cowboy pool scene is particularly important just because of the power dynamics at play. And we can see that Star throughout the film is so dependent on getting this comfort from Jake, right? And getting into cars with men so many times throughout the film, like not just even the cowboy scene where she jumps into their white convertible, she jumps into the van to join this crew that she doesn't really know, or she joins these men at oil fields where she's trying to sell these magazines but actually ends up selling herself as part of, you know, sex work because she wants to impress Jake or to achieve their goal of eventually getting a home. So one point that was really important was that Crystal is the only woman who is seen driving throughout the film, and she actually has a white convertible too. And this is kind of a symbol of, oh, women can also have this power, but at what cost? So we see at one point Crystal is dropping off the girls at the oil fields, and she says, okay, go and make some money. And she gives them these very seductive, racy pieces of clothing and to essentially seduce the men. So Star agrees to spend the evening with a young man for $1,000. And she doesn't want to resort to these measures of making money. But when she goes home, she tells Jake, like, oh, I did this all to get our dream. And obviously Jake is enraged when he realizes how Star made the money. But she does this several times throughout the film. She doesn't want to be telling stories or telling lies like he does. She wants to actually make her money in her own way. And that is really important to think about in the power dynamics of the car, because on the one hand, for the magazine crew, they have this unifying platform, this leveling place in the van where they can share their music, take drugs, laugh, and make jokes about each other. And then on the other hand, there's this convertible on the side that shows Jake is actually under the control of Crystal. And everyone's under this one power dynamic between this van and this white convertible throughout the film. So I think that overall, it's important to investigate power dynamics when it comes to impoverished people who are being taken advantage of, as Star does. And she's also the only biracial person in the film, and also the only one who you see is actually being sexually assaulted or has to do sex work. So that's like a really interesting observation of like the choice of that actress as the main character who has to go through all these vices, and yet she ends up not being traumatized by her experiences per se. She's more taking advantage, and like she says, she's fucking America.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And another point to note is that in the beginning, towards the beginning of her sales, she is adamant about not doing sex work. And with the cowboy, she's adamant about, I mean, she'll drink the worm at the bottom of a mezcal bottle, but she insists to Jake that she didn't do anything sexual to make the money. And I think that almost reflects the trauma she's still experiencing from her treatment by her stepfather. But then as the film goes on and she begins to make some money and gets a taste of it, she lowers her standards of what she's willing to do to make money. And then I think that Star's subconscious kind of comes full circle on the last sales trip we see them take, where Crystal takes the crew to her own impoverished hometown. And Star's going door to door, and she knocks on the door of a trailer, and three young children answer the door and invites her into the trailer. And Star looks around, and there's stickers and magazine clippings all over the walls, and that's really the only decoration, which looks exactly like the trailer that she grew up in with her stepfather and her younger siblings. And the kids only have Mountain Dew to drink, and that was her little sibling's favorite thing, and it seems like it reminds Star of her home and where she came from and all that she's been through. And the mother stumbles out of a room, and she's clearly an addict and barely able to stay awake. And these very young children clearly have to fend for themselves and provide themselves with food, which Star notices there's very little food in the trailer. So Star takes the money that she made doing sex work the night before at the oil fields and goes to a local convenience store and buys healthy groceries like bananas and eggs and stuff like that for this family and brings it back to the trailer and leaves it outside for them. And so to me, this was a real full circle moment for Star coming back to her roots and remembering where she came from and remembering how she has always taken care of her younger siblings who had even less than she did. And it really shows the viewer that though Star has been through so much, she is strong and resilient and still cares so much for other people, even though other people have let her down so many times. And then that night, the crew has a bonfire outside of the place they're staying, and they're laughing and playing music and jumping over the fire. And Jake gives Star a little turtle from the pond nearby as like a symbol of making up with her. And Star carries the turtle into the lake and goes deep in the water. And then the screen goes black. And that's how the film ends, with no real resolution. And I think that was intentional of Arnold, because unlike Hollywood films, she didn't want to taint this movie with unrealistic closure or a happy ending. And there's no rich savior that comes to help and pull them out of poverty. It is really a realistic portrayal, in my opinion, as most people who are impoverished remain impoverished and don't find a happy ending. And still have to fight every day, just like Star and the other kids in the magazine crew. They really never achieved their dreams, even though Star and Jake talked about their dreams of selling all of the jewelry and stuff that he had stolen from the homes and getting a trailer out in the woods somewhere we never seen this dream be realized. And I think that that is a real testament to this movie not being a typical Hollywood film about America, and doesn't give the viewer the like feel good feeling that so many Hollywood films try to achieve. Arnold doesn't worry about making the viewer feel good. She seems to focus on accurately portraying this reality.
I definitely agree that there's an inconclusive ending, and it's almost like you're saying with the full circle point that they really could have just ended it there, where she goes and takes these groceries to the family and she's showing that she's kind of coming back into her element. And like you were saying about the inconclusive ending and that being the authenticity that Arnold is trying to portray, it also opened up questions of, could Arnold do anything different to capture the reality further? And she does say in an interview that she did not capture some of the unpretty parts of poverty, but what would that have been at the expense of in this film? And could the director have captured more? So this is all up to the viewer's opinion to decide. And also thinking of the like alternate genres or categories that this film could have been in, or a different media to capture the magazine crew life, would also be up to debate.
Thank you.